The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 514, recorded on September 11th, 2018.
Welcome to the 514th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 348th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Turk.
I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
So, you know, I realized that it's 2018 and we were talking about this last week in a podcast that was just too screwed up to actually edit. And we were going on about what the best video game year for them was. Well, TJ talked about 1994? Was it 1994 or 1993?
1994.
Right. So I brought up 2007, and then I realized, I was looking at the list of video games for 2008, and I realized, wait a minute, there's a bunch of video games which we should be talking about since they just hit the 10-year mark. So that's going to be what our next gaming flashback today. But before we get into that, what have you been playing, Scott? As if we didn't know. And here's the thing. Last week, he went on and on and on about it. And I'm pretty sure he hasn't stopped talking, hasn't stopped playing it.
I have not stopped playing it. This is correct. I've been playing Dragon's Quest XI. I've gotten farther, and it is a really fun game.
So last week, you had gotten at least as far as the king.
Yeah, now I've gotten to... I've escaped the king. He's chased me.
What? Wait, what?
Well, because, you know,
when I got as far as the king, he didn't chase me. I mean, I had it was only a 15-minute, you know, it was only a 15-minute demo that I was allowed to do on it.
Well, he basically once you identify yourself as Luminary, he then says, "Okay, you're Darkspawn," and because, you know, just he has a really twisted logic because, you know, he knows that you're the guy that's supposed to defeat the Dark One. But because you're here, that means Dark One's coming. That means you are summoning the Dark One to defeat the Dark One. It's retarded. And so,
you know,
he has his knights.
When you said he chased you, it makes me think of Benny Hill, and I hear Yakety Sax as he chases you.
Well, okay. His knights come after me. And
still, I still think of Benny Hill now with the Yakety Sax song.
Yeah, I'm glad that gives you giggles then. But anyway, so I fled from him, and I've gone into the next area of the game where I tried to find this Tree of Life thing, and I had to find this rainbow, and there's this like cowardly prince that keeps having me do these tasks for him because he's too chicken to do it himself or too scared, and he's this like spoiled little prince.
Well, before we get into that, we should actually talk about the game itself. For those who don't know, it's an open-world RPG, basically, sort of. I mean, it's open-world in the way that, say, the Ultima series were open-world, where it's open-world, but not really. It's not like Skyrim. It's not like Zelda.
Battles are still turn-based.
Yeah.
Well,
no, I mean, it's not turn-based.
Yeah, it's turn-based.
It is?
Yes.
Well, I mean, the combat is turn-based. Not the exploring the world part.
Oh, no, I said battles. Right. Battles are still turn-based.
Right.
And the other thing is that it's extremely pretty.
Very. It is. It's gorgeous. I'm taking snapshots as I go through different areas and different scenes. I'm enjoying the characters. They're interesting. Like I said, yeah, and each character has their own class, but you can specialize what their abilities are. They have their own... Like, the hero has the Luminary, your rogue guy that you get right away, it has, like, stealth. There's a sorceress mage that has sorcery, and then the healing has healing. But they also have various weapons they can use, and they specialize, and you can specialize into either direction that you want to go into. So you customize your own character, and you can respec if you don't like what you've picked out. So, yeah, there's definitely flexibility there.
How many side quests have you done?
I think like 6, 8, and I'm not sure.
I mean, it's not like The Witcher 3 in which you have oodles and oodles of side quests, but
right.
They're there.
They're there, yes. And they have nice rewards, and there's like helpful NPCs that'll, you know, tell you where you need to go, and so yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's been fun. It's a fun game so far.
How about you, TJ? What have you been playing?
So I've been going through my backlog and, like, finishing games that I was very close to beating. And
now, before you do that, last week you talked about coming in fourth in a fighting game tourney.
Yes, I did. I was at San Japan, which is an anime convention in San Antonio, and they have game tournaments there. And so I went and – I haven't competed in Blaze Blue Cross Tag since I went to a local in about 2 months. So I was feeling the itch. I went down there and I went in on a Blaze Blue Tag. I'd learned some things since the last time I was in there, and they came through. I landed in a tournament of 50 people. I came in fifth place.
Oh, okay.
You're
in the top 10%.
Yeah. Generally speaking, like when it comes down to the finals, it's the top 8 people. So I was in the finals. And the people that I lost to 2 people, and they were notoriously close. Like if a thing or two would have gone just slightly different in a millisecond, I could have turned the tide and won. And it was a good feeling because I was rocking my characters, Jubei and Azama, or as I affectionally call them, the Cat in the Hat, because Jubei is a cat man and Azama wears a fedora.
Is he sort of a – well, it's not the magician one, is it, which pulls someone out of their hat? I mean, I remember seeing an anime-esque fighter in which one of the characters was dressed like a magician and just had a hat that they kept on pulling stuff out of.
This is not that. Jubei is basically a catman in a parka.
Okay.
And Hazama is dressed in a suit and a trench coat and a fedora. And
Now, you said last week that everybody at the tournament used power characters, but you used characters that aren't really thought of as power characters.
Hazama is decent, but Jubei is considered trash tier. Nobody likes him. He's considered very low on the totem pole, and I've found a way to make him work. And I'm one of the few people out there that I know of that takes him and uses him on a regular basis and can play him to the level that I do. And it's because I just decided that I don't care what anyone says. I like this character, and I'm going to make him work somehow.
Now, let me ask you a question. Did people react like, holy shit, you beat me with him?
Yes. Actually, there was a guy that was hosting the stream for the tournament, and he had come up against me earlier before he was on stream. And I actually heard him say, as I was like waiting for my next match, I came up against a team of Hazama and Jubei, which might be the most unorthodox combo I've ever seen. And it was cool. It was cool to get a shout out on live stream. I got props from a lot of other players. I had people that were actually rooting for me, and it was a good feeling. It was a good feeling to have my hard work pay off to the point where I actually landed in my first top 8 in competition.
Yeah, that's cool. If you might remember on Twitter the past few days, I was posting about it. Now, here's the thing. With Cooking Dashers, tournaments like once every 2 weeks or something like that. And early in the round, you know, I was wiping the mat because I had first place, and everything. I knew that wasn't going to last because, you know, and I knew I thought I wasn't going to be able to advance because the next venue was one I didn't own. But here's the cool part. I actually won it on a random roll. So I worked hard. I got to the minimum required to be able to play that venue in the tournament, and I squeaked by using the auto-serve one, which is a powerful thing that allows, you know, once you finish this, you don't have to take it to the people. It auto-serves. And I was able to do all of them except for the last one, and I knew I didn't have to do it because I was going to be locked in place. And I came in fourth in the world in that tournament. And here's the thing. I don't mind that I you know, here the gap between fourth, which was me, and fifth, I had about 44,000 points, and fifth place had something like 35,000 points. So
wow.
The top four, there was a big gap. And there wasn't that much of a gap. I think the top winner had 51,000. So it was sort of like, and the person above me who finished third had like 48,000, and I knew I wasn't going to really be able to get third with that. So I just said, you know, I don't have to finish this last thing. I'll do it some other, because I really didn't like the lit venue anyway. So I ended up fourth, and like I said, you know, I got a shot at the premium wheel, not the high rollers wheel, which is the best wheel, but the premium wheel. And you know, we were talking about this last week because we were talking about people. We were talking about the shooting in in Fort Lauderdale, and I'm going to see if I can't salvage something from that podcast because when we were talking about it, because it was basically all we talked about. And I talked about, you know, how, you know, I did the best I can and no one can take anything away from it, you know, and I didn't pout and I didn't cry. And here's the thing, unlike your fighting game tournament, mine is literally pay to win, you know, most of the time, because you have to get the tournament, you have to get the venues. Either you earn it with a slow grinding or you can just pay money to get gold to pay for them. Right. Mm-hmm. And I did a combination of both, but, you know, I'm not rich, so it's not like I just paid a lot of money, and I paid enough money just to get a little bit further ahead. But I managed to get fourth, and, you know, fourth in the world in a game, that's pretty good, you know. And for you, you were in a fighting tournament, and it's a little more evenly matched, even though you decided to handicap yourself with characters that you liked, you know, or at least make the handicap not a handicap.
Yeah, and, I mean, like, there was a lot of people out there that were rocking, like, Ruby and Gordo are considered to be the top tier characters, and ultimately that's the team that came in first, which whatever, but that guy I could have beaten if I had just hit a couple things in the right place at the right time. And I thought about the fifth place, and yeah, sure, I wish I had gotten higher. I wish I had gotten into a place where I would have gotten money for it, but at the same time, I went home, I thought about where I finished, I thought about where my strengths were, and then I thought about where my weaknesses were, and I just jumped right back on the game and I started practicing to be better next time, because I really do think that based off of where I landed this time, I could probably do even better.
Here's the thing, though, you got comments from other players, because they're not stupid. They know that the characters you're using are quote-unquote unorthodox. You know, so it's sort of like, yeah, look what I'm playing with, and I still finished fifth.
Yeah. And I mean, even if I had done horrible, even if they were right and I ended up going 0-2, I wouldn't have been angry. Oh, I mean, I would have been disappointed, and I would have been a little upset that I got knocked out so quickly. But I probably would have just gone home and done the same thing, like been a little upset, but then taken that upset and turned it into training for my next round.
This reminds me of the story of Darksiders.
I mean, that's what you do. You just pick yourself up and try to do better next time.
I saw a video about this character named Darksider, I think it is, who is an internet personality. He still does his show, but it's a lot lesser. But, you know, he was at a tournament which was using a console version of a fighting game, and there's a lot of people who didn't go because they didn't want, so he went, so... And what's it called? He was bragging left to right how he was the best player in the USA, because most of the players in the USA boycotted it, you know. So, and he was bragging, and then, you know, that kind of personality. You knew that when he had a successful YouTube show, and he started from the very very beginning. So there's like anybody who had a head of Let's Play would get a head start, you know, because it was still something new. And just his caustic personality just cost him fans, you know. And it's like if you went to something like that, you know, you're kind of mellow. It's like, yeah, well, I if you came in first, it wouldn't be like you would be pointing at people saying, yeah, I beat your asses. I'm the best here. I'm the best everywhere.
I mean, if I had come in first, I actually have a Jubei keychain, and I would have lifted that thing out of my pocket, put it on stream, and tapped it, and just went like, the best, and don't forget it.
That reminds me of a YouTuber I've been watching, and they like to say this line, and they say it sarcastically and funnily, but they say, I'm the video game boy, I'm the one who wins, and they say it jokingly, but you know, it reminds me of that, this whole topic.
The best players out there that I've ever known aren't afraid to admit, and I've seen them say several times, like,
I fucked up.
People go 0-2. nobody goes into their first tournament. Nobody goes into competition being good the first time. You go in there, you play against other people who have styles that you've never seen before. You probably lose. Only like a small percentage of people are adaptable or clairvoyant enough to go in and be successful right off the bat. Whether it's tournament jitters or whether it's just nerves or whether it's just somebody better than you. But that's what happens, and that's part of growth, and that's part of the process. And you got to be there just to have – you got it's a game. You got to be there to have fun. You got to be there to talk to people that are playing it the same way that you are, because that's what it's more about than just like winning. Only three to eight people win out of 50 to 2,000 people in any given tournament. So just go there and just have yourself a time.
I'm just thinking about you entering into Dragon Ball's Ball Fighting Z, what's it called, tournament. A large one.
Man, like, I fell off on that game when Blaze Blue Tag came out, and now people have gotten so far ahead of me. Like, there are freakish things going on with teams in that game, and I could not – I can't keep up if I tried. I'd have to practice real hard. I'd have to drop out all the other fighting games I'm doing and practice only DBFZ for months on end.
Yeah, see, it's not like Dragon Ball fans aren't obsessive.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we've been talking about this way too long. We're going to talk about the gaming flashback. Go ahead, TJ.
Braid. Braid is a platform and puzzle video game developed by Number None. The game was originally released in August 2008 for the Xbox 360's Xbox Live Arcade service. Ports were developed and released for Microsoft Windows in April 2009, OS X in May 2009, PlayStation 3 in November 2009, and Linux in December 2010. The basic story elements unfold as the protagonist, Tim, attempts to rescue a princess from a monster. Text passages throughout the game reveal a multifaceted narrative, giving clues about Tim's contemplations and motivations. The game features traditional aspects of the platform genre while integrating various powers of time manipulation. Using these abilities, the player progresses by finding and assembling jigsaw puzzle pieces. Jonathan Blow designed the game as a personal critique of contemporary trends in game development. He funded the three-year project with his own money. Webcomic artist David Hellman drew the artwork, which underwent several iterations until it satisfied Blow's vision. A preliminary version of Braid without the final artwork won the Innovation in Game Design Award at the Independent Games Festival in 2006. The final version received additional accolades. The game received universal acclaim, eventually becoming the highest critically rated title on Xbox Live. Some reviewers, however, criticized the game's price relative to its length. Braid was seen as a keystone title in the growth of indie game development since its 2008 release, and Jonathan Blow and its production were documented in the 2012 film Indie Game, The Movie. The game, as of 2015, has had total revenue nearing $6 million, which Blow used to fund his next game, The Witness.
So, yeah. For those who don't, here's the thing. The aesthetic style is basically Super Mario Brothers, except Tim's wearing a suit, and his princess is constantly in another castle. And one thing you have to understand, Jonathan Blow is a big fan of the Infocom Trinity, which was about development of the first nuclear bomb test, and that involves time travel too. So it has a famous ending, which we're going to spoil right now because it's a 10-year-old game. And if you haven't played it, well, guess what? Just if you want to know the secret, then put your ears in your head and wait for like 10 minutes or something. Basically, it starts on the second level, third level, fourth level, fifth level, sixth level. Then it starts on level one. And basically, you go in a real time forward to where you reach the princess, and it seems like she's helping you. But then you have to use the time reverse, and everything you did shows that actually she's trying to get away from you and you're the villain. And she's saved by a knight whom you thought was chasing her.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's also an additional element in which you have to collect stars, and they're really hard to get. I know that one of them requires you, it's the third level, requires you to put the controller down and leave the game alone for something like 8 hours, because the cloud that goes from right to left is that slow. So there's a lot of metatextual just, you know, screwing around with you, like the Stanley Parable.
Mm-hmm.
And if you collect all the stars, you're now able to reach the princess. And when you reach the princess, she explodes. Because the princess is the atomic bomb. Because during all those side parts, you get all these quotes and things, and they're actually actual quotes from atomic bomb manufacturers. Like, one of them has a quote by a scientist, I think it was by Oppenheimer, I'm not sure, who says, "We are all bastards now." You know, mm-hmm. I don't think they do the famous, "I become death, I become," what's it called? "I become death," you know. And like I said, he was greatly influenced by Trinity. Now, the other thing that we have to talk about is how much of an impact this game had. By the way, complaining about the price, it was $15.
Mm-hmm.
$15. I don't care if you sped through the game, and in order to speed through the game, you really needed to use a FAQ, because, you know, say 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours? I think it was well worth the effort, you know?
Yeah.
Now, did either of you play Braid?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I didn't complete it, but I did play it.
Here's the thing about me. Now, at the time, Xbox Live Arcade, every single game on the service had a demo. Gee, wouldn't you like to see that again? In which every single game that's on Xbox Live Arcade or PlayStation Network or whatever has a demo? Isn't a demo such an interesting concept? Although now we have to pay $40 for a demo. Metal Gear Solid 5.
I actually played a demo this last weekend, and it was refreshing. But I'll talk about that another time.
Here's the thing. I downloaded the demo, and it treated me to the title screen with one of the songs, Main M, which is a low thrumming sort of music. And I just said, fuck it, I plopped down the $15 immediately, or 1,200 Microsoft points. I mean, just the title screen alone said, yeah, you got to play this and buy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Scott, how far did you get in the game?
I'm not sure how far. Like, I guess, I don't know, third, fourth level, as you're saying, because I didn't realize I wasn't on the first level. But I remember collecting painting pieces and trying to put together a portrait. And I do remember the quotes being somewhat strange. I didn't really understand what they were saying and what they had to do with the character I was playing. So I had no idea that this was what the game was about. It's very surprising.
It also works as a metatextual commentary on Super Mario Brothers too. Because, you know, the creatures that you have to deal with are Goombas. They're weird-looking Goombas, but they're Goombas. Did you ever see the cartoon by Dorkly in which Mario meets Tim?
I don't think so.
It's hilarious. Seen that one.
Because Tim comes off as a poseur, and he's talking down to Mario, who doesn't understand. We're both the same. No, we're not. Mario points out, they're both trying to rescue a girlfriend. They're both, you know, both involves jumping. They both have Goombas. And Tim goes like, well, you wouldn't know. What's it called? You wear a suit. And he says, you are literally wearing a suit right now. And at the end of the cartoon, he insists, look, you know, we're nothing alike. And Super Meat Boy runs in and says, guys, I got to save my girlfriend with jumping. And the kid from Braid says, yeah, about that. So, yeah, it's an hilarious. I'll have to send you the link. I'll put the link in the podcast notes. It's a great, because here's the thing. When people saw that, the title, they thought it was going to be down on Mario. But it actually points out that, you know, we still really haven't evolved far from the basic concept. Not that we need to. Because Braid is still about a guy who tries to save his girlfriend with jumping.
But it still feels very different from Mario. I did not get a Mario feel when I played the game.
Yeah, because, here's the thing. It's a lot slower because it's basically a puzzle game, you know.
It is. It's a bit plodding.
but it's intentionally so, because you got to, you know, because, you know, when you have a time warping mechanic, either you turn back time or you duplicate time so that your former self does stuff, and there are things in the environment that aren't affected by time, which is part of the puzzle. And the music is amazing. And it's actually not, it's not original music. It's actually stuff taken from other sources. But the use of the music is so good. I mean, I love the lullaby set.
Yeah, it's very soothing, relaxing music, which I would not expect from a platforming game. So it was very different to me. And that's why I don't think I had that Mario feel, because I didn't feel... Like a platforming game should be kind of energetic music, and this was very relaxing, and I guess I see what you mean. He's kind of sitting there being snobbish and like, oh, Mario, you're this lowbrow guy and I'm highbrow or whatever. Mm. And that game certainly does give that impression. I think, yeah, it sounded like classical music, or at least very...
It's actually Gaelic music. Okay. It's a lot of Gaelic music. Actually, the last level, level one, has a very threatening, low, you know, harsh tone, but it's still not like a Mario thing. It's more like,
right.
You know, but the music really makes the game. You could say that for any video game, you know, where the music really, I mean, Braid would not be Braid without the music that it used.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So TJ, tell me about your experiences with Braid.
I never completed it, but I did enjoy the mechanic of it. It was one of those things where the ending was spoiled for me, well before I ever made it there. And I still enjoyed the game because I love puzzle games and I love the time mechanic that it used in it. But I really wish I would have discovered the ending on my own, as opposed to having people tell me about it.
Because here's the thing, when you actually play it for the first time, and even if you know the ending, I did not, but I'm just saying... It's sort of like when you're rewinding, it's sort of like, oh, shit, I get it now. You know? I still have not played Inside, so...
Yeah.
But, you know, this is sort of like with Limbo, you know, both these games basically, and I think maybe Penny Arcade Adventures, basically said, you know what, indie games are here. You know, this is what indie games can do. I mean, there were always indie games, but this is sort of like making it, you know, like the masses all of a sudden said, wait a minute, these retro games are pretty fun. And then Mega Man 10 and 11 came out, or 9 and 10 came out. Yeah, you know, graphics are everything. Yeah, well, look at Mega Man 9 and 10. That's Nintendo graphics.
Mm-hmm.
8-bit Nintendo, original Nintendo. So it sort of proves that, you know, you don't really need great graphics to make it an addictive game. And it's funny, almost every single indie game now goes for that 8-bit, 16-bit, or even 32-bit aesthetic.
Yeah, and I mean, like, Braid holds up. Braid's visuals hold up well. Like, it holds up to stuff that's even coming out now, because it really had a good artistic design, and it had a good, like, soundtrack, it had a good... mechanic. The whole thing is just like a good package.
You know, Undertale is on $5 right now on Steam. I'm tempted to get it. I still have not played it, even though the ending has been spoiled for me too. Although I'm going to tell you something, I'm not going to go for the genocidal thing because I already know that ending is going to be friggin' depressing.
it gets a little bonkers.
Yeah, I'm going to go for the peaceful, what's it called, pacifist run. That's usually how I play every game anyway.
There was a, I remember thinking, The Witness, let's talk about The Witness really quick. Like,
you mean Snooze Fest 2000?
I know, like, why couldn't,
here's the thing, you know, the Braid was really successful because of the music. You know what sound effects were in The Witness? None.
It is
completely
that's a good
silent
point.
Game. I mean, there are some sound effects when you're actually doing the puzzles, but otherwise, when you're walking around, there's no sound effects, no music, and it's sort of like it starts weighing on you. You know, sort of like, yeah, this is boring. Put something.
Yeah,
damn it.
That's. Yeah, I would agree with that, because like the puzzles are smart. They're still there, and they're enjoyable for someone like me that likes puzzles, but. There's
it's over and over and over again, though.
But it's just, yeah, it's just missing something. There's enough variety in Braid that, like, visual variety, whether you're, like, moving rabbits around or jumping over hedgehogs or getting keys that...
The rabbits! I forgot about the rabbits!
that it feels varied. And the soundtrack does help deliver all that. I think you're right.
Yeah. I mean, The Witness is just there. It's just there. I'm glad I got it for free because I would have felt ripped off. And I know people are saying, oh, Jonah couldn't solve... No, no. I solved almost all the puzzles, damn it. I just got bored. I went to each friggin' area and had to solve each of the puzzles there. You know, some of them were clever, like the ones in which you have to... you know the one in which you're... it was sort of like a garden... And you have to figure out which things you have to make sure you don't step on the same block twice. You know, that puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I get it. It's just dull, you know. if I wanted to do that, I would get one of those books with the finder words and just do that. 1,000 puzzles in this booklet. Yay.
Yeah.
And also, the puzzles are basically mostly all the same. You know, you had to figure out to section off different parts of the puzzle. You know, this space has to do with this, and if you have two dots here, you have to do this, and you have three dots there, you have to do this. You know, okay, I get it, move on. Variety. Let me put it this way. You know why Professor Layton doesn't bore me? Because all the puzzles are different.
And there's a story.
And well, it music. Has a story, but I'm just saying, even if it was just a puzzle game without a story... At least all the puzzles are different. I mean, they recycle them for later games. I get it, you know, but there's just so many times you can do it. But, you know, here's the thing. They don't do the Hanoi puzzle, do they, in Professor Layton?
I'm almost certain that they do at some point.
What's the Hanoi puzzle?
That's the one in which you have these cylinders on one side and two sticks on the other, and you have to move them from one side to the other. Every single BioWare game has the friggin' Hanoi puzzle. Fortunately, in Mass Effect 1, they allow you to just pay 100 Omni Jail, skip it.
Some of my favorite puzzles, though, in Layton are, like, they do have those, like, the mechanical puzzles
Actually,
that are just
no,
different.
They do have a variation of the Hanoi puzzle. They have the lambs and wolves puzzle, in which you have to get the lambs and the wolves to one side of the river without the other, but you can't have two wolves with one lamb or else they'll eat it, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay. Right. And they do, like, various versions of the mechanical puzzles like that, but they also do a lot of different logic and visual puzzles that have, mm-hmm. that are also really fun.
Yeah.
And then the music. Scott's right. The music in Professor Layton is super good, and I can't imagine what it would be like without that
but
soundtrack.
Like, that's a literal narrative story, though. You know, I'm talking about if you had something like... Here's another one. Myst. Myst had different puzzles, and it also had music by Jack Wall, who would later do the Mass Effect games. You know? People were not bored by that, even though it was basically a slideshow. You know, you go from place to place by sliding to the next, you know. There was no 3D at the time, so basically you went from one area to the next by it going slip. Myst was basically Myst was a puzzle game with no clear narrative. You know, you had to figure out the narrative from the environment, but it had music and it had varied puzzles. Incredibly hard puzzles, but still puzzles.
Yeah. I do remember that game being very difficult and loving the music and atmosphere. And, yeah, putting together the narrative from the environment was probably the biggest puzzle in Myst, because you had to figure out who to free and how to free them. And it was like a trick question.
Even just what the story was. For all you know, you're plunked down into this weird geometric space mm-hmm. with all these structures. And you're like, what the hell am I doing here?
Yeah, and you have no idea, and it's just, like, yeah, you fell into a book? How does that happen?
Oh, I got it. And by the way, you know, actually, I would bet you dollars to donuts that the Witness was partially based on Myst, because a lot of Myst is the same as a lot of you have to, what's it called, crank open these areas, you know, in the same way as Myst. Oh, you got to do all this so you can get the lever to pull the lever to open up the next thing. I don't know. It was, you know, there was a story in The Witness, you know, very that you could glean. But like I said, it was sort of like, an Ingmar Bergman movie without the visuals and without the dialogue and without anything else.
Anyways, yeah.
We're going to move on to the first game news. Go away. Go ahead, TJ.
Forza Horizon devs recruit former BioWare and Ninja Theory staff for unannounced RPG. Playground Games has firmly...
Come on.
Oh, yeah, from Shaq News. Playground Games has firmly established itself as one of the prominent racing genre developers with the very strong Forza Horizon series, but the studio wants to broaden its horizons and...
Get it?
In an effort to flesh out the talent, the UK-based studio has recruited staff from EA Motive, BioWare, Rocksteady, Guerrilla Games, and Ninja Theory for the recently opened second studio. All of these new hires will be working on an unannounced open-world action RPG, cough, fable, cough, cough.
Hey, but at least it's not Peter Molyneux.
The full list of new staff goes as follows. The full list of new staff goes as follows. Noel Lukasiewicz from BioWare, Rob Dendecker from Ninja Theory, Scotty Brown from EA Motive, Chris Goodall from Ninja Theory, John McKiernan, who's formerly of Playground, and Martin Lancaster from Rocksteady Studios. Playground Games and Ninja Theory are a couple of the studios that Microsoft revealed it had acquired during E3 2018, so staff shift between the two makes perfect sense.
I award Rob Dendecker as the perfect heavy metal band member name. Rob Dendecker. It also sounds very Norwegian, so... By the way, for those who don't know, EA Motive is their cell phone division.
Yeah. So, they'll probably be working on a companion app for whatever game they come up with.
No, I'm, you know, even if it's not Fable, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, but it's Fable.
But I'm also looking forward to that, too.
I'm looking forward to it. I there hasn't been a Fable in a very long time, and this is a very awesome team of talent. I mean, like, you got BioWare for story here, you got Rocksteady, Guerrilla Games, and Guerrilla Games for action. You got Ninja Theory to just, like, weave some interesting mechanics and concepts in there. I mean, that's an awesome team. I would love to have
it. I also like it that, you know, the two developers that Microsoft, you know, hired or acquired are basically, you know, trading staff around. It's like, yeah, well, we want your guy. It's sort of like being on a baseball team. It's like, yeah, we want – let's trade here. I need him. You can have him.
Yeah, I'm excited for whatever it is these guys come up with. Like, I can't wait to see what they reveal because it's going to be something worth our time.
Yeah. And if it's Fable 4, hooray, you know? I mean – I just hope they hire John Cleese again, because there's nothing funnier than in Fable 3 as a king when you dressed up as a chicken. John Cleese said, "You're dressed up like a chicken. Is there a reason you're dressed up like a chicken?"
I mean, John Cleese in general is just a peach.
Yeah.
So this might be an actual Fable game that I like, maybe.
Wait, you didn't play you didn't like any of the previous Fable games, like 1, 2, and 3?
Nope.
Really?
Really.
You have no soul.
I played them, and they were just boring to me.
I have to do the Paul thing. You have no soul. That's because
I have a soul. That's why I don't
mouth.
Like them.
Speaking of Paul, by the way, we've been chatting quite a bit lately. So hopefully, here's the thing. He's teaching in Florida, as everybody knows. I might do a movie, or not a movie, I mean a web series in Florida for like a couple of days. Hopefully I'll get together with him then. You know.
That'd be neat.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear from Mr. Paulo again.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. Hollow Knight comes to PS4 and Xbox One on September 25th. This is from DualShockers. There's been a Hollow Knight renaissance this summer after the Metroidvania title made its way to Nintendo Switch in June. And in just a few short weeks, it'll be making its way to more console platforms. Team Cherry announced today that Hollow Knight is scheduled to come to PS4 and Xbox One digitally later this month on September 25th. That's only 2 weeks away, folks. Team Cherry also said that developer Shark Jump assisted with the ports of Hollow Knight for these platforms. The version of Hollow Knight that will be coming to these consoles is that of the Voidheart Edition, which includes the original base game in addition to four more content packs that add more missions, boss fights, and abilities. If you haven't played Hollow Knight, those extra add-on packs are staggeringly large. There's a lot of game hours included in this bundle, so prepare yourself.
So I haven't played Hollow Knight.
I might get that for the Switch.
What?
I have not played Hollow Knight, and I might get it for the Switch since I don't own it yet.
But if you get it for the PS4, one, you'll have a larger hard drive space, and B, you'll get all the content.
Yeah.
Have you played it, TJ?
Hollow Knight? I love Hollow Knight. Hollow Knight is one of my favorite games of 2016? 2017? That was a really, really fun one. It came out after I had finished up with Owlboy, so it was my pick of 2017 as far as platformers go.
Wait, hold on. Time out. The way you talked about Owlboy, I thought that was going to be your game of the decade, not just the year.
It is. I love that game.
Oh, okay.
But I do have a special place in my heart for Hollow Knight because it's a super good Metroidvania.
You're allowed to love more than one game. Just saying.
I like Hollow Knight a lot more than I like Shovel Knight, and I do like Shovel Knight, but there's something so beautiful about Hollow Knight. Like, it's a dreary beauty. As opposed to Shovel Knight, which is just all-out happy, robust cheer.
So you're saying it's Dark Souls cheery?
Sort of. I would say that it's... Ah, oh, man, how to put it? I don't know. But I'm happy to see all of my colleagues rediscovering this game on different systems. Like, I've seen a whole bunch of people playing it on Switch recently, and it's really cool to see what they're finding out about it. And they just released a new DLC pack, so I even have a reason to go back to that game now. And it's well worth it. Like, if you like Ori and the Blind Forest, it's on par with that.
I do love Ori and the Blind Forest.
Yeah, I'm looking at the map to Hollow Nest. Excuse me. And it reminds me a lot of Castlevania.
Mm-hmm. It's really good. And, like, the way it builds upon itself with, like, the items that you get to move forward, the little trinkets that you can use to augment your abilities, and, like, and even the way that you get the map. Like, you don't start out with an actual map. You have to find the map, and then you have to each area. And then you have to buy map markers that make it so that you can track where you're going. So there's actually a section of the game where you just have to look at the bends and curves in the level and then look at the map and figure out where you are.
And the aesthetic is very worry, though. At least the color and the glowing parts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it's got beautiful music. It's very, very good all around.
Yep. So, coming out, and, you know, you can get achievements / trophies this time.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. If you haven't tried Hollow Knight, I mean, there's no excuse. It's on everything, so go. So if you have some spare time, give it a go, because it's if you have even an ounce of love for platformers, it's well worth the time.
Or Castlevania type games. Yeah,
it's well worth the time.
Speaking of things coming to new / old platforms, Halo 5 Guardians coming to PC? Question mark. And this comes from Ars Technica. After more than 11 years, a retail Halo FPS game might finally be making its way to Windows. A weekend update to Amazon's listing for Halo 5 Guardians included enticing and clearly intentional change to its box art, a new Xbox One console exclusive label. The phrase appears not once, but twice, but three times via very clearly rendered angles of a physical box and replaces the original 2015's box of only on Xbox One descriptor. Microsoft's Xbox Play Anywhere initiative, formally launched in late 2016 with a first-person platformer ReCore. By the way, ReCore was criticized for, you know, not being big enough, but if you play the full version, you know, now the ReCore you know, they have a new ReCore Special Edition. It actually makes it worthwhile, just so you know. The program has since included every first-party Xbox game on program has since included every first-party Microsoft game on Xbox, allowing those games to work on either any Xbox One system or any Windows 10 PC. By arriving one year earlier, Halo 5 missed the Play Anywhere cut. Recent games in the program, including this year's State of Decay 2 and Sea of Thieves, feature the same console-exclusive tag on their Xbox One boxes and also run on Windows 10. It also has the 4K and 60 frames per second on the box, but that was already patched in if you already own the game. Microsoft reps did not immediately reply to our questions about this updated box. Up till now, Halo faithful have had a few less than ideal options to play the game's first-person offerings on Windows PCs. The Halo 5 Forge standalone mode has a free official Windows 10 version, and it includes support for multiplayer combat on custom Halo 5 maps, but this requires jumping through some substantial hoops, including fully manual matchmakings. That means you'll need to find a Discord server and exchange Xbox gamer tags that way. So if it is Xbox Play Anywhere, if you already own Halo 5, don't worry about it. It's already available on PC for you, because, you know, everything you own on Xbox One is also on PC. And yeah, I mean, you know, we have to talk about Halo 2. Microsoft enforcing that only Vista owners play it sort of killed the franchise on PC. Because you didn't really need Vista. That was just a bullshit requirement. I got Vista to play Halo 2 because I wanted Xbox achievements on my PC, basically. I'm an achievement whore, what can I say? So...
How excited are you to get back into Halo? You're the one who likes it a lot, don't you?
I do, and it's basically the only shooter I play online. It's the only, you know, I don't play any other shooters online. I don't play Battlefront. I don't play Battlefield. I don't play Call of Duty. I don't even play Gears of War. But Halo, I do play. And here's the thing, you know, the rep of Halo gamers online is unwarranted, because here's the thing: even if I'm listening to all chats, I never hear slurs, ever. I don't know why they're not on Halo. Maybe they said we'll go to League of Legends instead and do it, you know, or maybe we'll do it on Fortnite, you know. But you know, here's the thing: a Halo multiplayer used to be it, you know, no competition. Then Call of Duty 4 chipped away, and then Battlefront chipped away, and, you know, and chipped away and chipped away and chipped away. So the people you have left playing Halo, who really love playing multiplayer Halo, tend to be the people who are a little bit more mature, have been playing Halo longer, and, you know, they like old school, you know. Halo is about as old school in terms of online multiplayer shooter, console shooter that you can get. So yeah, I find the people who play Halo to be the least offensive, which is kind of faint praise, to tell you the truth. Yeah, it's the least offensive multiplayer. You only hear the N-word maybe once every week instead of once every game. Sad but true. But yeah, I mean, and here's the other thing, you know, 343 knows multiplayer. Say what you want about Bungie and 343, when it came to Halo multiplayer, they were dead on. They knew how to play balance, you know. I think the best equivalent I can find is Rainbow Six Siege, because like the developers at Ubisoft for Siege, the people at 343 listen to their fans a lot. And when they start complaining about something, or when they want to, you know, when they say this is no good and all that stuff, they listen, you know. People demanded a horde-like gameplay thing, and they worked hard and they finally released it. Unfortunately, it was half-assed because, you know, the levels weren't designed for horde gameplay, but it was there. They attempted it. And, and you can bet your bottom dollar when Halo Infinite comes out, they're gonna you know, start it from scratch.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see exactly what Halo Infinite is going to look like. Considering just, like, how long it's been since there was a from-the-ground-up Halo game.
You also have to think about cross-platform play.
Yeah, which I guess Xbox, I guess for that one, Microsoft can happily say, yeah, we'll do cross-platform for everybody but Sony.
Yeah, sorry, Nintendo, but we don't have a Halo game for you yet. But if we do, you know, the thing is that that reminds me of the story we did way back when they were having a cross-platform play. It's probably going to have to detect whether you're using a controller or a keyboard and mouse. And, oh, by the way, let's just say the Xbox One is now fully supported for keyboard and mouse for gameplay. So there's that. And you have to wonder if the fact that they were introducing keyboard and mouse gameplay on the Xbox One, you had to know they were getting ready for Halo 5. They were getting ready because, gamers on the Xbox may swear it up and down by the gamepad, but if they have the option to use their keyboard and mouse, the serious players are going to say, fuck it, I'm using the keyboard and mouse. Because, the keyboard and mouse, faster aiming. There's no guessing. Which is good,
True.
Now, if Microsoft ever releases Halo for a Nintendo platform, they almost did a long time ago. They almost released Halo on the DS. Can you imagine that if Halo came out on the DS? Here's the thing. If Microsoft ever decides to release a handheld console, just release the original Halo or Halo 2 on it, and people will buy it in droves. A good battery and Halo 2, and be able to use data in addition to Wi-Fi. Can you imagine people playing Halo 2 in a park?
I can't, but that would be interesting.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay. Red Dead Redemption 2 leaks tease Red Dead Redemption 2 leaks tease Battle Royale mode from US Gamer. Trusted Reviews recently felt comfortable sharing some leaks the publication received. Neither the site nor US Gamer could substantiate the information, however. The supposed leaks already predicted the game's main characters, Arthur Morgan and Dutch Vanderland. But they also say that the single-player campaign will take place over a huge open world, including locations like Armadillo and Ridgewood. Trains will become a mode of transportation alongside horse-drawn carriages, minecarts, and handcarts. Gambling returns in the form of poker alongside other side activities like horsemanship challenges and a pretty in-depth fishing system.
Well, I'm really in for that. Here's the thing. When I was playing World of Warcraft, I can't tell you how many hours I played just fishing.
I spent as much time in Final Fantasy XV completing the fishing side quest as I did finishing the actual game.
The cooking side quests?
The fun part about fishing in World of Warcraft is actually bullshitting with your friends while you're fishing. I mean, you just sit there, chat, and fish at the same time.
I had no friends, so I just fished alone. But here's the thing. I enjoyed leveling up because I also took perks in cooking. So I'd get the best fish, and then I would cook up some really great stuff with it, along with some of the rarer creatures. I got to 300 cooking, which was the top rank, and in fishing, I think I got to 290. I'm pretty sure they increased the levels, if they even exist anymore. World of Warcraft has changed so much that I don't even know what my character's going to be like if I hop back in.
Fishing in Final Fantasy XV was, more riveting than the battle system.
I will say this, it'll be more fun than having to pick frickin' flowers, like you did in the first Red Dead Redemption. Yes, I'm a badass gunman. Oh, let me pick these flowers.
All Red Dead Redemption 2 has to do is look at Final Fantasy XV and what they did with fishing, and if they come even close to that, I'm there. I am there for the entire game. Like with Grand Theft Auto V, there will be a first-person mode for both single-player and online multiplayer in Red Dead Redemption 2. The leaks mention bespoke animations for the perspective. Online play will also be included, but perhaps the biggest reveal is that alongside competitive multiplayer modes like Revive, Survive, and Money Grab, there will be a Battle Royale mode. No word on whether this is similar to the ones found in games like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, but if true, then this is pretty big news. Red Dead Redemption 2 will also have an open-world online mode with sophisticated NPCs that will decorate storefronts in the morning and pack them at night. There are a variety of ways to earn XP in online mode, and you can even purchase your own customizable tent. Lastly, there is mention of a companion in Red Dead Redemption 2 mobile app that will include social elements and a poker minigame. These details are still unconfirmed, and despite receiving these leaks in August 2017, Trusted Reviews only felt comfortable publishing them recently. So again, we'll have to wait and see if the details end up coming true. Red Dead Redemption 2 is scheduled to come out on October 26th for PS4 and Xbox One.
Yeah, the fact that they're releasing it now, which is basically a month and a half before, I think these are probably true.
Yeah, and I mean, like...
they also make common sense, too.
Everybody was saying, like, we're not going to do a Battle Royale mode, because everybody's doing a Battle Royale mode, and then a few months later, they're like, yeah, well, I guess we're going to do a Battle Royale mode, because everybody's doing a Battle Royale mode.
It's just basically big deathmatch with a shrinking map. It's like, you know, it's there's nothing special about a Battle Royale mode. It's just freaking 100 people get being plopped onto a map and have the map shrink.
Mm-hmm. It kind of makes sense with Red Dead Redemption because that's kind of the feel of that game is just everything out for themselves and just this Wild West, and so of course it'll have a Battle Royale mode or
ultra
hardcore mode if you were playing in Minecraft.
Here's what I want though. I want people to have cougars and bears take out players if they're not careful.
I mean, they've already done a thing, and they're already doing a thing right now in the Call of Duty Black Ops beta for their Battle Royale where there are zombies.
I was about to say, it probably involves zombies, whatever it is.
So there's nothing to say that they can't have NPC animals attacking players as they try to fight each other in a Red Dead Redemption.
People will be cursing cougars from here to, because bears you can probably avoid, but no cougars? Yeah, they just say, by the way, I'm here now.
Cougars will chase you down, kill your horse, and then murder you.
Yep, that's what they do.
And if you have horses in battle, here's the thing: if you have horses in Battle Royale, actually, you probably need cougars just to get people off horses.
Yeah, it's true. I agree with that. Oh my gosh, that would actually be interesting to see, because I'm kind of not interested in the Battle Royale mode unless they change it up. And this would be really nice because you would have this really death to environment elements, because you'd have like these wild animals trying to kill your ass, and you know, and instead of just a border or other players, you're just trying to survive against cougars and bears and bobcats and boar and just all these other crazy things.
And Bigfoot. You know, actually, I think if I was doing the open world online mode, I'd probably be the sort of person who just stays in town and plays poker.
I would do that too. Like, the poker is relaxing in Red Dead. Up until somebody wins, and then you get up and shoot them.
Or they cheat. I wonder if they'll allow cheating, because that's a gameplay mechanic in the single player.
Yeah.
I hope they're. By the way, they talk about competitive multiplayer modes, but I would like to see one or two co-op modes.
Maybe
look like you all have to rob a bank together, sort of like in Payday.
Yeah, I think they've already done heists in Grand Theft Auto, so that's something that I feel like they could easily implement at this point, or at least they have the foundation to figure that out.
The thing about Red Dead Redemption is that I really don't like Grand Theft Auto that much. But for some reason, Red Dead Redemption, there's nothing really different about it except you're riding horses and not cars. But there's something about Red Dead Redemption that makes it feel different from Grand Theft Auto. It makes it feel more relaxing than Grand Theft Auto.
It's rustic. It's like if Grand Theft Auto was in your grandpa's antique shop.
I don't know if it's because it's rustic. I think, A, the shooting is a lot better, because in Grand Theft Auto, you know, good luck if you know where you're going to be shooting. You may have a reticule, but it's sort of like the guns don't feel like they lock on to anything. And yes, I know Red Dead Redemption has the bullet time mode, you know, in which you can aim, but even when you're just shooting normally, the aiming feels much, much, much better.
Yeah, I actually, when I played Red Dead Redemption, I didn't use bullet time that much. I kind of forgot that it was there.
If you're going to have a match, you know, quick draw thing.
Yeah, you only really needed it when, like, I think the point where is you had to shoot a hat out of the air. That was when I absolutely needed the red eye. Up to that point, I hadn't been really using it. I forgot that I even had it, and so I was just going through the game, just manually shooting and pretending I didn't have this ability.
I also hope they allow you to have private servers, because then all three of us can just get on a server and Yeah, freaking wrong. The problem is, watch, it's going to be, oh, it's crossplay platform with everything. Wait, Sony.
Sony doesn't want to cooperate.
I'll get the PC version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no PC version announced yet. Never mind.
Yeah.
There's going to be one, though.
I was trying to think of, like, what would be the force that drives people inward on a Red Dead Redemption Battle Royale map? And I think it's probably going to be a dust storm. I don't know, so it would have to be, wouldn't it?
Or how about a fire?
Well, I was thinking along the lines of you're in the eye of a hurricane, and the eye is slowly closing.
I like that.
Or maybe it's just the FBI closing in on you. If you get too close, they just shoot you dead immediately, so you have to stay away from them.
I think the dust storm mechanic would be cool, though, because it would blind you when you're outside the circle.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I think you're too much of Mad Max now.
That's what I want. I want a Mad Max storm to drive me towards my enemies.
You want a Mad Max game that doesn't bore you. That's what you want.
Yes, I do. I mean, you ain't lying. I would love a Mad Max game that was, you know, good.
Yeah, I think a Mad Max MMO, and you get to customize your desert wild man. You know, you end up being maybe one of Lord Humongous's people, so you get to figure out which leather stuff that you wear. But yeah, I mean, like I said, it's sort of like October 26th. Wait a minute. That's 6 weeks away. It's sort of like coming up fast all of a sudden because, you know, it's sort of like in the background of everything we've been talking, you know, we've been talking about games and all that stuff. And all of a sudden, oh, by the way, Red Dead Redemption coming out now. What? Wait, what? And part of it is that we haven't seen the Rockstar Blitz yet. We haven't seen the advertising Blitz. I'm pretty sure it's coming. Because when Grand Theft Auto 5 was coming out, you couldn't swing a dead cat without seeing a Grand Theft Auto 5 advertisement on screen or in public.
Yeah. I'm ready to see more stuff because they've been super tight-lipped about their trailers, their details. I'm kind of ready for that wave of Red Dead goodness.
Now, I did say last week that I pre-ordered it, and I got the Mega Super Edition from GameStop, the Ultimate Edition, which, for those of you who don't know, it comes with a metal box, it comes with, of course it comes with the, So, final thoughts on Red Dead Redemption 2.
I'm ready for the Battle Royale mode. I'll go with that. But I'm more ready for fishing, for Red Dead Redemption fishing.
I'm interested in the story. I mean, the characters, that the protagonists aren't exactly what I was hoping for. But, you know, the story in the first game was so good, so I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt on that. And I do want to fish.
I'm ready for the fishing story. I hope there's like a...
The fishing story.
Yes.
Yes, we had the Bassmasters contest. The big Bassmasters contest in the game. Gotta get yourself a 30-pounder.
Give me a wasteland weirdo who's really into fishing for, like, bizarre and horrible reasons that I have to do.
You basically want Seth. Come on.
It's not like Seth or the cannibal or like any number of the weirdos that you meet in the wilds of Red Dead Redemption. Just give me that type of character.
What, the guy about the guy, like, who's marrying his horse?
Yeah. The guy who's trying to catch the biggest fish so he can marry it.
This is sort of like an interquel, you know? Not quite a prequel, not quite a sequel, so you might see all those characters. You might see Seth.
Yeah,
it's still 1899. Actually, it's 1899, and the game, if I remember correctly, Red Dead Redemption took place just after the 1900s, like 1903, 1910, because the FBI had just formed. Anyways, how about you, Scott?
I didn't really finish the first one, but I really enjoyed it, and looking forward to seeing what they do with this one.
I don't know if you're lucky that you didn't finish the first one, because finishing the first one was sort of depressing.
Yeah, the ending was pretty much spoiled for me, and I kind of didn't really want to go through it, so I lost my motivation to finish.
I knew it was coming. No one spoiled the story for me, but it was so obvious what was going to happen. sort of like I was waiting for the other foot to drop the entire time when you're riding home.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, okay, when are things going to go bad? This is taking a while. The game's not ending enough. Mm-hmm. End, damn it, end. Oh, yeah.
Well, it's still going.
Oh, great. Now I'm going to take my son out to teach him how to herd cattle. Yeah, stop it. We know what's going to happen. Stop. I wonder if they're going to have Red Dead Redemption 2 Undead Nightmare.
I guess. I'm tired of zombies.
Well, here's the thing about that. Actually, it wasn't so much zombies in Undead Nightmare. It was that the Aztec god was pissed off at the world for screwing around with her. I forgot the exact story, but it was an Aztec god. And it wasn't just zombies. It was everything else, too. It was like all these creatures were coming to life, you know? Okay. And then you had to be an asshole and kill off all the Sasquatches. That, you know, aside from making the buffalo extinct or the bison extinct, you know, what's it called? Killing off all the Bigfoots was depressing because they can talk and they ask you, and the last one just says, you can kill me or not. I don't care. You killed my entire family.
It is hard to want to play an asshole character.
Yeah, I mean, at least John Marston was trying to be... You could play him as trying to be not an asshole anymore. Which is where we already talked about this. We were talking about Red Dead Redemption, you know? The I Know You missions. When he talks to God / the devil / death. Whoever that guy was. Anyways... look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us on iTunes comments. I'm at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I'm at Johnny Chugs.
I'm at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week, and hopefully this podcast isn't screwed up.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.